produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Daily Audio Stash is where responsible marijuana smokers listen in on the latest news about cannabis, hear the voices of the marijuana law reform movement in special segments and interviews, and kick back with comedy and music no other podcast can offer. It's Normal's Daily Audio Stash. More information at normalaudiostash.com. First up today, it's news from Normal. Our news today, Seattle's HempFest, a sunny success. Record crowds turned out to Seattle's Myrtle Edwards Park this Saturday and Sunday for the largest marijuana law reform rally in the United States. Seattle's HempFest was a resounding sunny success this weekend, with Normal in strong attendance. Alan St. Pierre, Normal's executive director, and Keith Strupp, Normal's founder, were on hand to meet the public and also speak on stage. Keith and Alan called in to the Audio Stash studios this Saturday from the grounds of the event.
Keith, how's it been like for you this year? What's the experience been like for you this year?
I got to tell you, I think it's a wonderful, maybe it's the weather, maybe it's just, you know, after 15 years, people really do look forward to this event every year. And the people are just flocked to the Normal booth. I mean, at any one time, there are 20 people lined up in front of the booth. And it really does kind of remind us that there's an enormous amount of goodwill out there among the marijuana smoking public, and Normal's been out there for 35 years arguing on behalf of marijuana smokers, and so it is nice to see that for a lot of these people, they really do identify with the organization. It's wonderful to get out and spend time with them.
Who are you looking forward to seeing today? I know they got a lot of speakers and acts, but who are you going to try and catch today?
Well, I'm trying to stay, our booth, I'm actually spending a lot of time at the booth meeting people that come by, so I'm staying close to the main stage, and of course, eventually, both today and tomorrow, all the major speakers at some point speak at the main stage. In fact, I'm speaking today at 4 o'clock myself there. So I hope to hear everybody. Ethan Nadelman just came by. Ethan's always good at these events, and he's a good rabble-rouser. He does good public speeches. Jack Herrera will be speaking, and Jack is held in enormously high regard by this movement and the impact he's had with his books and that sort of thing. So I look forward to hearing Jack. But frankly, I like all of it. I mean, what it seems to me, it's the single most empowering event of the year in the marijuana law reform movement. You can't be present with 75 or 80,000 people where everyone is openly smoking marijuana, not everybody, but the majority, and nobody gets arrested. I mean, for the moment, marijuana is effectively legalized in Myrtle Edwards Park in Seattle for 2 days. So it's wonderful to be part of, and I think it sends everybody home feeling empowered.
And this is a real international event. Lots of Canadians show up. It's really something that resonates in the whole region. Do you have a lot of Canadians come up to you there at HempFest?
Oh, yeah, lots. In fact, John Conroy was just speaking. John is the lawyer for Canada Normal and from Vancouver. And John was just up on the main stage a few minutes ago. But there were lots of Canadians. There was a guy came by that represented Normal at the cannabis trade thing in Europe last year. I don't even know what country he was from. But you're right. It's more than just a regional thing. It's even more than just a national thing. It's the largest pro-marijuana rally in the world. So, I mean, it's really quite an achievement that these folks have done, and they deserve all of our credit because it is no easy undertaking. They have over 1,000 volunteers that work on this thing. It's just an amazing thing to see and experience.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. I know you've probably met a lot of the HempFest volunteers in the time before. What are the volunteers like? What are the HempFest volunteers like?
Well, you know, frankly, most of them are young. You know, they're in their teens and 20s, and there are a few old-timers. Vivian's probably, you know, I suspect Vivian's in his 40s, and there are a few of them. But mostly they're on the young side, which is terrific because it portends a great future for the movement. And they're all true believers. I mean, keep in mind, these are people at work for months leading up to this event, and no one gets paid. This is a totally all-volunteer operation. So I got to tell you, I don't think there are any more true believers in the entire movement than these folks that put on the hemp vest. They're also, incidentally, the folks that run Washington State Normal. So we're of course, especially proud at Normal for what they do.
Alan St. Pierre is on site at Seattle's Hemp Fest, joining us on the audio stash. Alan, welcome today.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
All right. How's the event turning out so far?
Oh, hemp hooray. It's terrific. It's a beautiful, clear day here on the waterfront in Seattle. And there's approximately, I'm going to guess, about 40 or 50,000 people here in the first 2 hours. And it'll probably max out at about 80,000 people here. The park is almost a mile long and is full of humanity.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So what's on? Who's on stage now? What kind of events are going on?
Well, at this very moment, the lawyer for Rene Boget and for Michelle Rainey in Canada, John Conroy, who's on Normal's legal committee, is a very distinguished lawyer from Canada, from British Columbia. He's on stage right now talking about why, you know, what's going on in Canada, why Americans should not go up there thinking they can escape American drug laws, because many of his other clients have been extradited back to the United States. And he's actually just now telling everybody that we should all get joint dual citizenship in Canada, because Canada only has 30 million people. California has more people than Canada. So what John is tongue-in-cheek suggesting is that we all ought to go marry a Canadian, get our dual residency, and make Canada, you know, a real liberal, righteous place regarding marijuana.
Oh, talk about an event that's sharing the love out there, Alan. I can't think of anything better than the marrying of 30 million Canadians to 30 million Americans. That's great.
Yeah, I think it would do wonders for the human gene pool, frankly. So, it's just an amazing day. The commerce that's going on is amazing. It's just whether it's the booths or the people going by with carts. I mean, we're talking. I mean, when I first got here this morning, one of the first things I saw was six or seven Seattle police officers not harassing, not arresting, but talking and looking and holding on to these huge $400 and $500 glass bongs and commenting favorably to the young man who blew them and is has them on a small shopping cart. I think the police were actually more concerned about the shopping cart. I think he might have gotten it from a local supermarket.
So that's a great demonstration of the atmosphere up there. Last year there were no one was arrested for pot smoking last year, and you know, I know it's still sort of early in the first day, but with that huge turnout, what's the atmosphere sort of like? What are people doing right now?
Oh, God, there's so much arts and crafts going on. There are five stages here. I'm in front of the main stage right now where the Normal and High Times booth is. There are right now there's a hemposium stage going on, which is sort of like a mini Normal conference. They bring in some of the most distinguished speakers in drug policy reform, and in a big Cosba tent with rugs spread out, people are out of the sun and listening and getting educated to some amazing information. In fact, right now, the panel is on marijuana and cultivation, and for some strange reason, the tent is packed.
So we've got the hemposium up there, we got speakers going on up there, and I know they got some comedy going on in the evening along with some music. What are you looking forward to? Who are the acts and the people that you're going to try and see?
Well, Randy Rhodes is here from Air America, and she is the host for a good part of today, and she is terrific, and I cannot wait to hear her get before this crowd around 4:20 this afternoon when she's got about 100,000 people in front of her. So I'm really looking forward to seeing her let loose on George Bush the same way she does on the radio. I think she's probably going to be inspired today. Hopefully she won't drop too many F-bombs. But otherwise, Ethan Nadelman, Keith Straub, Chris Crane, there is just such a huge group of people. There must be 85 speakers here, and all of them have an important message to deliver, and they do it very well.
Wow, Alan. And so when people come up to you at the Normal High Times stand, what do people come up to you and say? I mean, they must be so psyched to see people like you and Keith actually there at the event.
Oh, it is pretty wild, I have to say. This is one of the great junkets for us, both of us individually, and to experience the raw feedback of people coming up to us literally by the hundreds here each hour. You see what I call the normal right angle turn, where they walk by the booth, they look up and see the normal logo, and they make this 90-degree turn directly to the booth and come on over and shake hands and very often want to engage in other frivolities and things.
Well,
it is really an amazing day where everybody is kind and reaches out and there's just a huge, huge community going on. And actually, you might be able to hear one of our favorite people now. That is Vivian McPeak. Give me an H. Listen. Oh, hold on here. We're going to go through a chant.
Nice. Nice.
Hold on.
Give me an H. Give me an F. Give me a P. It's okay. I have a feeling by 4:20, you guys.
So by 4:20, we'll be better trained, and boy, they're going to be people screaming, screaming H-E-M-P.
Nice. Nice, Alan. Well, I wanted to give a big thanks for joining us here today, and Alan, we'll speak with you again. Have a very fun and safe time out there at HempFest.
Hey, Hemp Parade. Thanks, Chris. Take care.
We'll have exclusive audio all week long on the Audio Stash, recorded up at HempFest this weekend. If you could make it up to Seattle's HempFest in person this year, consider a donation to make sure Seattle's HempFest is there and even bigger next year. Just visit hempfest.org. Welcome back to the Audio Stash on this Monday. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org. Mondays here on The Stash, we focus on activism, and the HempFest in Seattle brings together a number of the country's most active individuals in marijuana law reform. Last week, we spoke with the event director, Vivian McPeak. Vivian's social justice work over the last 20 years in Seattle have made him one of the most respected activists in the country for any issue. At this year's Normal Conference in San Francisco, Vivian was a part of the keynote panel, Grassroots to Grass Tops. It featured many of the King County and Seattle lawyers, city councilors, and activists who've created a healthier environment in the city. Next today, we'll hear a portion of Vivian's talk about his broader experience as an activist pursuing marijuana law reform. We have links to download Vivian's entire talk at normalaudiostash.com.
Mr. Vivian McPeak.
Thank you, Dom, for that generous introduction. You know, I'm honored to follow somebody that I love and admire so much, Martin Martinez, whose work I think is infinitely more important than the majority of us, because he's dealing with the people who really don't have time to wait for legalization to happen. You know, pot smokers are immoral. And I'll bet that 50% of people that say that probably think that the George Bush administration is moral. You know, something else. I have a prepared statement because, and this is the truth, I get very nervous speaking in less than about 20 or 30,000 people. And I know that sounds weird, but it's the truth. It's an honor to be here among such distinguished colleagues. I barely feel qualified to be up here considering the groundbreaking work and advocacy for normal that so many of you in this room have been actualizing. And I doubt that I have much to offer you that you don't already know, but I do have a unique perspective, and it's that which I hope to share today. Before I begin, I want to say I'm a little self-conscious being in San Francisco and speaking about the Pacific Northwest movement. Because groups like ASA and California Normal and all the other incredible groups have been such trailblazers and normalizing medical marijuana and marijuana smoking in general to a degree that I don't think has ever happened. So I just want to give kudos to, you know, that I am in a place that I realize I'm among some serious peers here. So I really want to give respect to the San Francisco movement, the California movement in general. I'll be using Seattle HempFest a lot in my presentation, both because it's a primary source of my experience, because I believe that it serves a good example of how far grassroots activism can go, but also an indication of some of the limits of the grassroots model. When harvesting a crop of marijuana, which I'm sure only a few of us here have any personal experience in. It's not the roots that we save and savor. It's the tops. And grass tops is vital to anything. You know, all grass roots can really do is create an environment where the grass tops can actually actualize legalization and affect legalization. And I just, you know, want to say that many of us actually understand that. First, I want to talk about normal. My parents often stated that they thought that there would never be anything normal about me. And I really want to thank this organization for the opportunity to prove them wrong. This is as normal as it gets, I think. Being a young man of 47 years of age, I remember back when NORMA was, in my mind, a mystical crusader, a bigger-than-life organization that I would have been happy just to sweep the floors or empty the trash for as a young man. In fact, I'll be around when the panel's over if you need some help tidying up and stuff. Now, over 30 years later, I've had the opportunity to experience NORMA as a flesh-and-bones institution comprised of politically, economically, and culturally diverse cross-section of everyday supporters, activists, academics, professionals, policy wonks, even maybe a couple stoners that have gotten in undetected under the radar. And it's this very diverse makeup of the movement that I want to touch on for a moment today. I read not long ago that another leading pro-reform organization, which has been very successful, had decided early on during their formation that there would not be any ponytails and scraggly beards in their organization. This may be a smart strategy for their specific goals and purposes. It's not for me to say. There's no single strategy or protocol for success, but rather a woven fabric of ideas and approaches, a mosaic that forms a picture of reform. But I believe that our strength and our future lies in our diversity, our tolerance of each other, and ultimately in our sense of community. I say that because I believe that everybody has a role and plays a part in enacting massive social change, and a key to success is knowing what the appropriate role for oneself is, considering one's resources, experience, expertise, and even what one's personal experience offers. For example, with my dreadlocks, my increasingly Dr. Andrew Wallish-looking beard, my piercings, and my not-visible tattoos, I am not the guy to be appearing on the 6 o'clock news, and I know it. Most viewers will automatically associate my personal appearance with the images that the media uses to portray someone who has an appearance such as mine. And you know, in fact, I represent what many consider to be the Achilles heel of the marijuana movement, legitimately. And I'm talking about the relentless, unceasing association with the 1960s counterculture that is used to marginalize, relegate, and discredit the great individual and collective works towards reform that we all participate in. Now, I made a conscious decision a while ago not to cut my hair and shave for the movement. I feel that in my own way, I do my own part, and that media presentations are better left to someone else, such as the 95% of the population who look more mainstream. Some will consider my decision as irresponsible and self-indulgent, as there's no doubt that my appearance is a liability in certain circles. Some will never be able to get past my appearance to consider the potential wisdom, value, and merit of my opinions. But what I've learned is that this cord is in my way of reading my thing. What I've learned is that what may be a liability in one circle can, I really struck a chord here. If you could sing, sing, sing. Let's do that. Let me start over again. What I've learned is that I should probably just wing it, as I learned, is what may be a liability in one circle can be an asset if used strategically in a different social setting, providing that which the street, the kids now call street cred. The reason that I'm even focusing on my own appearance is to make the point that we cannot afford to deliberately or even accidentally alienate anyone who could be a potential supporter of our movement. That's one of the reasons I'm so proud to be a NORMA member. And I'd like Alan and Keith to know that I just paid my national membership a few days ago before I came here. I thought that would be a good idea. Because NORMA is not only inclusive and embraces diversity, but because NORMA is very accessible to the average citizen. We need to build community because community gives us staying power. Community gives us access into neighborhoods and living rooms during the 23 hours a day that the evening news is not on television. Grassroots activism to me means community-based activism. Whether it is precinct-by-precinct politicking, door-to-door fundraising and educational outreach, or producing events to raise money and educate, it is the awareness of the political and economic power that can be harnessed by the grassroots community based activism that I believe provides any movement longevity, fresh bodies with fresh ideas, and even more importantly, the street cred an organization needs to affect changes from a bottom up rather than a top down fashion. I feel that both of these approaches to reform are necessary to someday meet in the middle and achieve victory. Our fearless leaders in Congress appear that they have pressing priorities other than marijuana decrim or outright legalization. Did I say the L word here? It's amazing. In the same way that a dishwasher is vital to the operation and function of a restaurant, I feel that grassroots activists are just as essential to a political or social justice movement as the suit and tie policy wonk and institution. What the grassroots activists may lack in experience or training is often compensated by a lack of cynicism and the presence of a naive optimism. How many times have you heard the seasoned activist tell a newbie, "That won't work, we tried that"? If you told somebody back in 1991 that you were going to build a pot rally from the ground up with $0, place it in one of Seattle's, of downtown Seattle's most beautiful waterfront parks, staff it with 1,000 volunteers, invite bands and speakers to come from all over to participate for free, and that the police would just stand by, smile, and look the other way while 100,000 plus people got baked in the sunshine, just about anybody would have told you that it was virtually impossible. But we never heard any of that. So we didn't know it was impossible. Therefore, we were able to do it almost solely by invoking the power of community. While Seattle Hempfest does not have an intentional community, we have something that I believe is much easier to maintain and possibly just as powerful. Seattle Hempfest has a community of intention. In an effort to foster strength, loyalty, and morale in our organization, we've instituted support networks that we believe enhance the community vibration of our group. The Hempfest organization is extremely diverse, with members ranging from people who are disabled or even homeless to professionals who own businesses or even own more than one home. For the economically disadvantaged among our 100-person core group, we've created a project called Operation Munchies. Hey, don't laugh. At some point, we may have to break to treat an emergency case of the munchies, all right? I once had the munchies so bad that my doctor actually prescribed me a mashed potato and fried chicken patch for my arm. You know, things are changing here, you know, medical marijuana. But all seriousness aside, the way Operation Munchies works is that the more financially stable members of our core group purchase gift cards from local supermarkets, usually in $25 or $50 increments, that are available upon request by any core member as long as the funds are there. In the last year, I estimate that over $1,000 has been distributed in this fashion, ensuring that the most humble among us can participate with the knowledge that as long as they belong to our group, are loyal, and are honest, they will not starve. And I say starve because for grassroots activists, that's a reality for some activists. It's really hard to make a living and work full-time in activism. Obviously, we have implemented safety valves that prevent any single member from abusing this nicety. And the result is an understanding by our core members of just how valuable that they are to us. Real, authentic community does not let members go hungry or homeless. A dear 34-year-old member of our core group, speaker and band reception specialist James Matheson, was recently diagnosed with non-small cell lung cancer metastasized. He's been given a 15% chance of living more than 5 years. We immediately created a two-hour prayer circle that has met weekly for 2 months to offer James the only real support that we can think of that we can all participate in. Naturally, not everybody feels comfortable taking part in such metaphysical activities, but you can be sure that everyone understands just how much we value James, how important he is to us as a human being and as a member of our organization. During Hempfest, speakers and bands can expect to be treated to the best hospitality that we can or cannot afford. The same can be said for our 100,000-strong week of volunteer staff. We could have easily got by doing nothing for our participants and staff as we did in the first several years of Hempfest. But our desire to cultivate community is as important to us and as valuable to us as financial resources are. Now, I'm going to ask you to forget that as I continue on to Hempfest's financial crisis. Being completely rained out in 2004, having had the worst year for contributions in recent memory in 2005, having two bounce checks from a vendor and a sponsor last year to the tune of $6,000, incurring legal fees in our struggle to survive a huge development project that's taking place right now in Seattle at the mouth of one of the parks that Hempfest takes up, has all contributed to Hempfest coming up disastrously short last year to the tune of $24,000, the first time that we've ever come up short more than maybe $1,000 or $2,000. Such debt and bad luck would certainly destroy many events. And you may be thinking that our zeal to foster community may have played a role in our finances today. And this might be true to some extent, but I want to point out that it works both ways. HempFest has community. Two married members of our core group just recently refinanced their property and paid off every dime of HempFest's $24,000 debt. Despite the fact that James, who's fighting cancer, is their son. We fostered community, and we worked very hard to create, preserve, and honor it sufficiently. Without that keen sense of community, HempFest as it stands today would be indeed impossible. I want to reiterate that my contention that grassroots community, grassroots activism to me means community activism. You can imagine the pressure that I feel to raise the funds to pay them back and support them as they've all supported HempFest beyond the call of duty. So this would be a great time to break out your checkbook and write it. Oh, what's out that?
That was Vivian McPeak, director of Seattle's HempFest, speaking on the Grassroots to Grasstops panel at the Normal Conference. You can download Vivian's talk and the entire two-hour panel with links we have posted at normalaudiostash.com. If you couldn't make it up to Seattle's HempFest in person this year, consider a donation to make sure Seattle's HempFest is there and even bigger next year. Just visit hempfest.org. Let's round out today's show with a little tune we found up at podshow.com. Here's an independent band, Stoat. From the band Stoat, found up at podshow.com. This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Thanks to Keith Strupp, Alan St. Pierre, and Vivian McPeak for contributing to today's show. podshow.com for all the great pod-safe music. We feature the band Carne Cruda as our theme. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. Thanks to Red Aphid Interactive Media for the podcasting technology. We're back at 4:20 tomorrow. If you listen to the Audio Stash, cast your vote at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. Podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.